Welcome to Two Bards, One Mic. Insert interesting music here.
I swear we're actually going to get music one of these days.
Nah.
127.
127.
You guys may hear a little bit of clicking in the background on this one. You probably won't, but just in case you do, no, it's not us trying to control your minds remotely. It's also
it's a little bit.
Though. Yeah. Why don't you tell them what the potential drive noise in the background is, Scott?
That potential drive noise is the new QNAP NAS.
Ooh.
That has 5 6-terabyte Western Digital Red Pro hard drives in it.
Ooh. I just stacked all those, too. I just stacked all of those discs that I just walked into.
That's not the discs we're talking about. Those are antiquated DVDs.
Look. TMNT?
TMNT and GDR.
Redbox GDR.
Yes.
Let's clarify here. This is the Christian Doyle's pasty white torso. This is the sound you're hearing here. It's the Luster cover.
Yes. The Anthem DVD.
The Anthem DVD.
Not the Rush album Anthem, but...
No. The DVD that represents far, far, far too much monetary woe to really get into.
Yeah, and really shitty trailers.
That you can't fucking skip. There, have I ever told you what happens if you try to rip that DVD? Or if you try to rip it?
I think so.
All the special features in the trailers are like one track.
Right.
So it rips. What a fucking terrible, terrible master.
Yeah. And so we're doing a RAID 5, which for those of you playing at home, 5 terabytes at 6, or 5 drives at 6 terabytes would be 30 terabytes minus the algorithm bullshit.
Well, it's not algorithm, it's marketing.
Okay.
Oh,
sure.
A megabyte is 1,000 kilobytes. It's 1,000 all the way up.
Instead of doing it binary.
Right. And then, so we're doing it RAID 5 so that there's redundancy.
Yes.
Which means I've got to lose a drive. So I have 24 terabytes marketed, 22 point something
21
physical,
point, 21.
And then
6.
21.6 is what's
usable.
Right.
So that's 21.6 terabytes, though. That's really nice.
Yeah. That's either 20 or 200 times the storage I had on my first computer.
Yeah.
And first 386, 486 computer.
Yeah, probably 200 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure I had a 1 gigabyte hard drive.
Wow. Damn. Not on a 386 you didn't. First 1 gigabyte came out after Pentium. There wasn't even a 1 gigabyte hard drive available before then.
Then I built a 486.
Okay. Because I had a 486 DX266, and the biggest hard drive that I could get at the time was 250 megs.
Right. Yeah. Whatever it was asininely small.
And I remember getting that and thinking, I will never need more storage in my life.
Yeah.
This is so big.
A floppy. It holds a megabyte. 1.44.
Zip disk? When will I ever fill up a zip disk?
Now I can't get any of my zip disks to read, to pull all the...
Sounds like a personal problem.
...legacy data off of there.
Well, you still have to... I've heard there's a USB bridge for zip disks, so you can get... also, you can get an old super drive, which plugs in IDE.
Okay.
Those will read still.
Hmm.
As long as you have an IDE port on your motherboard.
Right.
But the old COM port or parallel port ones don't fucking work at all anymore. So, there you go.
Wah, wah. So it is building its RAID array. And after about an hour, it was 0.3% done.
Yeah, I think it'll get faster over time. We were also accessing it and doing a lot of setup stuff.
True.
So I think that's part of it. But I remember mine, which is only 8 terabytes of usable space. So 10 terabytes total, 8 terabytes of usable space. That took a day and a half.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's got to go through and write all the parity bits. It's got to. It's essentially, even though the drives are blank.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's nothing on them.
It still has to write to all the blocks to get parity so that it can, so that it doesn't take a huge amount of overhead to change it when you write to the drives.
Ah.
So.
Yeah, not sure I understand how any of it works, but I also realize I don't need to.
No, you don't. You just need to know that you can lose a drive and still be up and running slowly.
Slowly.
Then get a new drive in there and everything will be fine.
Yep. Yay.
Without losing any data.
Yay.
So that's pretty cool. So how was your week, Scott? Wow, that good, huh?
I'm trying to remember what I did.
Well, work backward. Start from today, where obviously there was some excitement today.
There was ulcer-inducing game today where the Seahawks won, and a win is a win when you get right down to it. People will say, oh, well, you got lucky because the guy missed the field goal. That was one play in 60 minutes. There are many times that we should have been putting the game out of reach. There are many times that the Vikings should have been doing exactly the same thing to us. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it came down to a really bad snap and a really bad hold for the kicker who pooch punted it to the right. We still won 10-9. We scored the touchdown. But yeah, it was, I thought it was all over. 22 seconds left to go. How could he possibly miss a 22-yard field goal?
And he did.
And he did. So, wow. Yay, we live to fight another day.
This is one of three that you need that to get to the Super Bowl.
One of three to get to the Super Bowl. So now we play the Carolina Panthers. Albin Johnson, creator of the 501st Legion, his team, 15-1 on the season, have been sitting around for a week waiting to play, and now we're going to Carolina.
There will be no dishonor in losing to Carolina should it happen. But.
Oh, there.
There will be dishonor. Which Carolina are they from? North?
Yes.
So, okay.
I believe. They're just the Carolina Panthers, so I'm not sure.
No North or South? Both states get them?
I guess. Yeah, I'm actually not
100%
sure.
No, you don't understand. They're the Carolina Panthers from North Dakota. Oh, right. Gotcha.
Yes. Carolina is just a name.
Cincinnati kid fought out of Philly.
It's like the Bengal Tigers.
That was Police Squad, right? Oh, the Cincinnati kid. Oh, yeah, I remember him. He fought out of Philly.
I'm sure it was.
That was a great show.
Either that or Airplane.
Yeah, that was a great show.
Built websites,
right?
Launched Connors for If There's a Hell Below last week, I believe. Working on the Kairos.
No, maybe. I don't know. I didn't watch it.
I haven't either.
Yeah. Well, I don't have an opportunity to watch it because I'm not going to Slam Dance where it is showing.
Right, twice,
2 screenings
at Slam Dance.
Yeah.
But Nathan assures me there'll be. If it doesn't get into Stiff, there'll be a Seattle premiere.
That would be great. I would love to see that.
At least for cast, crew, and all that jazz.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically this week's been a lot of work, a lot of prepping for the game today.
I bet.
A lot of deep knee bends and
emotional
sitting and standing and
gotta do that.
Getting my claps down and my
I don't want to know
bullshit
and my clap.
What?
All right then.
So yeah,
that's cool. So I did get to go see Hateful Eight this week. Let me hold on to that because I want to talk about some stuff around Hateful Eight. No spoilers.
No.
Nothing is really going to get spoiled for that fucking movie anyway, though. There's not. The writing was totally, totally backseat to the to everything else. Anyway, I'll get to that in a second. Primarily, outside of that, I've been doing, so I've been trying to get a hold of the automata people because I'm supposed to be doing media management.
Automata. Social. Okay. Yeah. See, I thought it was automata.
I've pronounced it automata because automatopoeia, right?
Right.
But I mean, that's how I pronounced it. But when Lacey Levitt called me, she pronounced it. I'm not good at pronunciation. She pronounced it automata or
automata.
Automata. Yes. The way I didn't do it.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, that being said, I'm supposed to be doing social media management for them. Haven't received my call. Trying to figure out what's going on there. Apparently, I'm still on the paperwork, but like they're filming, so I should be doing stuff. So I'm a little concerned about that.
What is social media management for those playing at home?
Social media management, Scott, is the simple act of controlling the flow of information from the production to the fans on social media.
Wow.
Things such as Facebook posts, behind-the-scenes photographs, news, updates, and director commentary.
Sweet. So would that be on the website, or is that just going to be Facebook, Twitter stuff?
Facebook, Twitter. I don't think they have a Pinterest, because that would be weird.
Instagram, maybe.
Instagram, probably, yeah. So it's just basically going through and filtering stuff coming from set.
Mm-hmm.
Adding spin to it, adding places you can go to find out more, and then scheduling posts. So trying to keep it under two or fewer a day.
Nice.
Because that's how many you need for engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Over that, people don't care anymore.
Right.
Under that, and it's, crickets. So what are you going to do? So maybe I'll contact Lacey after this and find out what's going on there. Because I'm really super excited to work on the project. It's probably my second favorite Penny Arcade story arc.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it very interesting. For those of you who don't know, the story arc is about... It's essentially the way easiest way to describe it is it's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but with robots instead of toons.
Ah, okay.
So... You've got a guy, a human cop, working a beat that also includes robots, and he's working with a partner who's a robot kind of thing. And
gotcha,
it's very interesting. So we'll see how that goes. Other than that, I've been planning for next weekend, which we should prep everybody because next week's podcast is going to be a little different probably because we're likely going to record it live at... DG Reunicon.
Recording it there and then
uploading it on Sunday, right?
Okay.
Yeah, just because that's going to be the easiest way to do all of it.
Yeah.
So we are going to the Reunicon Thursday through Sunday, out at Fort Warden.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some other stuff planned around that as well. We're going to go have some fun and do some creative stuff, which should be a lot of awesome.
Yeah.
So that'll be good. Yeah, so I think I'm just going to go ahead and get right into it then about Hateful Eight.
Okay. I think you should.
So Hateful Eight is beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. I watched it on 70mm film, so it was projected. The cinematography is top-notch. There are some amazing homages to The Long Shot. It opens on a snow-covered cross... And it just lingers there as the music is playing forever, and then it slowly pans down all single shot to a stagecoach in the distance that approaches. It's all timed impeccably, so you've got essentially a 7-minute long shot with a framed foreground element going to a non-framed background element coming. It's beautifully done.
Wow.
Great cinematography. Didn't need to be shot on film at all. Did not need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And let me explain, because I know that a lot of people, I just finally figured out what's going on with this desire, this Tarantino-style desire for film. And I didn't realize what was going on until I thought about myself and CDs. So...
Okay, but let's back up and say that this was shot on wide format 70mm.
This was shot on wide format 70mm film, Panavision
And that was its native...
Or sorry, Panasonic.
Panasonic, and that was its native...
Frame.
Frame. And then it's been, from that, in limited engagements, is available via 70mm, mm-hmm. or was downscaled to...
Or was downscaled to standard 35mm.
35mm.
Which 35mm anamorphic, you're losing a little bit on the sides if you're watching it 35mm, or mm-hmm. if you're watching it digital projection.
Right.
They cut some out of the sides. No need to cut it out of the sides for digital projection, by the way. So that was a choice they made to push people into the 70mm screening. Mm-hmm. But anyway, now comes the problem I have with all this. So first of all, Quentin Tarantino wanted to force people to go to the theater. He has admitted this. This isn't a conspiracy. He said, mm-hmm. I want people to go to the theater and experience things in the theater. Okay, fine. I get that. That's fine. But in doing so, only the 70mm special engagement has the whole frame.
Right.
He framed the entire film to the edges of the 70mm frame. So you have people who are going to be cut in half talking to each other if you watch it non-70mm. Like their backs are going to be cut off. Okay? Because he pushed everything to the edge of this frame.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the actual aspect ratio is something like, because it's even more than the 2.5:1. I think it's like 2.7:1 or something like that. It's really, really wide aspect ratio. Okay.
Is that CinemaScope?
Cinerama. Cinerama is the actual. So Cinerama is the name of a scope that was competing with CinemaScope.
Oh, I thought it was just the theater here.
So there's a bunch of, man, let me think here. What was the one? One of the scopes was 3 35mm anamorphic frames side by side, so the camera actually shot three reels of film at once.
Wow!
And stitched it together. That was used. I mean, that was, we're talking like Spanish art house films. Mm-hmm. Some of those did it and stuff like that. But it was crazy wide. Yeah, and think about it. Today, now we have fucking Tombstone Video because everyone can't turn their fucking phone. And that's what's popular too. I don't know if you saw, but there was a big study about how those videos get more engagement and more end-to-end watch if you film a Tombstone video.
Because probably people think that it's, oh, it's an amateur. It's mm-hmm.
that, or they're, the other thing is, I think the numbers might be skewed because Tombstone videos don't tend to have production value at all.
Right.
They're literally short things that people film. And what do you normally watch when it's a Tombstone video? The normal thing you're watching is someone either getting hit in the nuts or someone falling into a fucking lake. So you watch it until the end, you know?
Right.
I hate watching them, though, because everybody does like this anticipation lead-up shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it just drives me nuts. It's like, if you're gonna do bullshit Tombstone video, just fucking cut it at the beginning so we get right to the part that I care about.
Right.
I don't need to see you, like, fucking your shitty ham hand coming in adjusting shit for 20 minutes waiting for you to set something up, asshole. Anyway, analog versus digital.
Yeah.
This is where I'm going with this. Quentin Tarantino doesn't believe in digital at all. Okay, mm-hmm. He has never believed in digital. I don't know if you remember, but there was he directed a scene in Sin City
mm-hmm.
on digital, hated it, did a snide mission accomplished joke when he walked off and was like, yeah, it sucks. He's full of shit. And here's why. Because he's full of shit and he's full of self-righteous shit because he wasn't always full of shit, nor was he always wrong. Let me put it this way. I'm going to go back to Vinyl, okay? Mm-hmm. There's this ongoing, like, oh, Vinyl sounds better. It's fuller. It's warmer. It is a better sound, mm-hmm. right? There's a qualifier there that's always missing. Than CD.
Right.
Vinyl is fuller, richer. I will give you 100% of this. It's absolutely better sound, minus the pops, minus the cracks, you know. If you get a brand new out-of-the-package record and play it on a brand new record player, it's going to sound... You can't even describe how much better it's going to sound than the CD version of that same song.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're going to introduce failure over time, and that's one of the things about analog that people now are in love with are the problems with it. Mm-hmm. So things like the hissing and the popping, it's like, oh, it adds to it. No, it doesn't. Shut up. Shut your fucking hipster mouth. No, it doesn't.
It's nostalgic.
It's nostalgic. It makes you, it harkens back to a time when that's all you had, so you got used to it in mm-hmm. certain ways, but it isn't better. But analog was better than CD to the human ear by a good chunk.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is CDs were very, very limited in the amount of bandwidth they had on a disc. So what you end up having is you have 16 bits per, you know, you basically have 16-bit range to make a sound, okay? And you have 4,100 of those every second, okay? Which means if you have a really, really high note and a really, really low note playing at the same time, that has to average that or dump information in the middle, because it's just not going to have the dynamic range, the latitude mm-hmm. to present both of those sounds.
Correct.
Okay. That's why a lot of people refer to CDs as tin ear music, because mm-hmm. it does. It sounds tinny. So what they did to stop the tinny sound is they boosted the bass. And that's why now the CD sound is heavy, heavy bass, terrible, terrible mids, and muddy treble, because it was all about getting the bass out of the CD. So that's where the vinyl thing started. Problem is, fast forward, you know, 20 years after CDs were created, now we have people in their basements who can record at 24 or 48 kilohertz.
Mm-hmm.
At you know, and they can also do a bit depth of 128 instead of 16.
Right.
Okay. So now what you have is something that is, we scientifically know it is absolutely positively indistinguishable from analog. And you have these new formats like FLAC and OGG that can bring that to your compressed media on your drive. So now, as long as it's been mastered properly, there is literally no better way to listen to music than digitally
mm-hmm.
through all this stuff, because now you're not introducing artifacting, popping, scratches, scraping, sounds that were never intended to be in the song.
Right.
You're no longer introducing those. So digital is a cleaner way. Quentin Tarantino started ranting against digital film when digital film was in the CD stage.
Right.
Which I would argue, even episode one of, well, from a completely film standpoint, not, I don't care about the writing, I don't care about anything else. Episode one was kind of the first major release where digital was used end to end. And even there, it doesn't stand up to scrutiny today. If you go back and you look at the highest definition version of those films you can get, you see pixelation on the edges. Yep. You see problems with them. They don't look as good as the film transfers at all. Not even close.
Mm-mm.
That's the kind of thing Tarantino was looking at when he did his little Tarantino rant. Okay, don't tell me how good the fucking film is. I buy the fucking film. Okay, I know how good it is. I send Bonnie to the store. She buys fucking shit. Okay, that's Tarantino talking about film. Not really, but it is. The problem is, even in consumer-based sensors now
mm-hmm.
for cameras, we have now surpassed the physical ability of protein on celluloid. We can now get smaller photosites on a physical sensor or on a digital sensor than you can have proteins on celluloid. So if we were to take, say, an 8K weapon and shoot the exact same shot that they were shooting in Hateful Eight on film,
mm-hmm.
we would have gotten the exact same frame.
8K weapon being a camera.
A camera. It's a red. It's a red camera. It's a beautiful, awesome new sensor that they're. Anyway, you go look it up.
It shoots in 8K.
Shoots in 8K.
Okay.
So you can like reframe and do all your stuff. So if we did that with the exact, what you would have is something that blown up twice as large would look better than the analog film,
mm-hmm.
and it's free of pollution. It's mm-hmm. free of the pollution that hipsters call the warmth,
Right.
When they really mean it makes me feel like I when I was a kid and I had to listen to all the Defects.
Yeah.
Okay? There's nothing wrong with that. I get that. But stop trying to say that it's better. It's not. It touches something in you from your past. It's not better. If we would have had this technology back then, Quentin Tarantino would be talking about how he loves smaller sensors because he feel, I don't know, whatever. But right. But it's just because of when he grew up. It has nothing to do with how the actual technology compares. Now, there is something to be said about dynamic range in film mm-hmm. for light, because your dynamic range on film is determined by the ISO of the film. That is, how much light you can let into the lens and how fast the chemical reaction happens on the negative film. So you have ISO, the film ISO goes from like 50, 100, 200, 400, and so on. The higher that ISO is, the faster the chemicals will react to the light, but generally the grainier it is too.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with bigger, clumpier crystals or bigger, clumpier proteins that produce the actual final result on the celluloid. So proteins isn't right. Molecules, sorry. Pigment is what I meant, not protein. So basically what you end up with, though, is as long as it's exposed right, some people argue it's infinite. It's not infinite, I don't think. But if it's exposed right, you get much more dynamic range out of film. That mm-hmm. is, you keep detail in the overexposed piece and you keep detail in the underexposed piece at a much larger range than digital.
Right.
Now, that being said, the human eye has, I think, 22 stops worth of dynamic range where the human eye can discern detail in a bright thing and a dark thing.
Mm-hmm.
Most digital cameras are between 10 and 18. And most film, if you want to talk practically, like this is not going out and specially manufacturing a shot to make sure that everything's exposed perfectly for this, practically, it's about 16. So the new digital cameras are right on par with film.
Mm-hmm.
They are, or better in some cases.
Right.
So I don't want to hear that either. Quentin Tarantino is just being super hipster about this because he wants to be super hipster about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason I bring this up is because watching Hateful Eight, while totally an experience of it, like it gave me this happy, nostalgic, like, oh, this reminds me of when I was a kid kind of feeling. After I got over that, though, it just kind of made me sick because all the text was twitching the whole time and the whites were... So the other thing is, of course, projected film deteriorates super fast.
Mm-hmm.
So the engagements are already over. All the 70 mil engagements are over because they literally are not allowed to show it, to show those film strips anymore because they've been overused. So like we found out on Thursday that Thursday was the last day to see the 70 mil until something like Cinerama gets a new batch in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's bizarre. But I mean, by the time we saw it, the whites were scratched. They had like terrible like marks and all over the place. The any text that comes on the screen is blurry. And like, it's like there's a slight, it's like there's a 0.5 Gaussian blur over everything all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dark. It's really dark. Projected film is really dark. That's not the projected film's problem. That's because most theaters today aren't set up for that.
Right.
So they don't turn their bulbs up because they don't want to burn them out. Same with 3D. 3D is supposed to, you're supposed to increase your luminance by like 33%, and they don't because they don't want to waste the bulb because mm-hmm. they're expensive. So it's not really the film's fault, but again, you end up with a darker frame, jittery frame, soft edges, and all of this analog noise that digital just doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
All in the name of something that is a lie. That is someone lying to themselves or not accepting the fact that their viewpoint 20 years ago may not be applicable today. So that's my rant there. I was thinking about it today with CDs because that's like I used to be pretty massively, and I'm still anti-CD. I think CD is a gross way to listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. But FLAC, OGG, getting it direct from the artist on these direct... I mean, even MP3 now.
Mm-hmm.
If it's manufactured for MP3, if it's recorded and made for MP3, never goes through that CD crush.
Right.
It doesn't have to be crushed for CD. So you still get a fuller sound out of MP3s even than you got out of CDs. So that being said, it's time to let go of falling in love with the stuff that made your media bad,
mm-hmm.
and calling it nostalgia. It's we're done. Let's just move on. We can now get a beautiful, beautiful frame in digital that is pixel perfect in terms of, like, we're not going to have this particular reel isn't going to get a scratch on it, and suddenly this reel now has a line through it.
Right.
It's pixel perfect, and it's tons cheaper, so you're able to get better ideas onto the screen much faster. Let's just accept that that's not a bad thing. And while, you know, while this was an art experiment more than anything,
mm-hmm.
Tarantino wants it to be, he wants it to usher in a new age of film resurgence. And I don't think that is, I think it's going to poison a lot of new film students.
Mm-hmm.
Who are suddenly going to think that this is what they have to do to be considered. And I think that that's a bullshit thing to put on someone.
Right.
That's like saying you can only be a runner if you wear Nikes. So don't even try running if you're not wearing Nikes.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Another interesting place to see that sort of argument,
mm-hmm.
is the latest season of Project Greenlight,
mm-hmm.
where the pretentious New York film student who wins wants to shoot on film.
Uh-huh.
And everyone's like,
why?
Why? Well, because you can't make digital look like film. And so the producer takes him to eCine.
Okay, yeah.
And sits him down with the guy, and he's like, okay, so you want to introduce the, like you're saying, the flaws, the right. degradation and the lighting, and, you know, so we can put this transfer over.
Mm-hmm.
Here's film, here's digital.
Can't tell the difference.
And the guy's like, oh yeah, no, I know which one's which. And he guessed correctly, mm-hmm. but then asked the guy, well, can you do this? And he wanted to do some silver stripping acid wash thing that,
okay, right.
you might be able to do with film,
mm-hmm.
but you wouldn't necessarily do that in a movie. You'd do that for an art house movie or for an experiment.
Right, like Clerks. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And it is. It's basically, you double the... it makes super, super high contrast by doubling the amount of silver nitrate deposit on mm-hmm. the negative initially. And you can totally do that. You can. There's a program that specifically goes out and grabs the green Luma channel from digital. Because, so, all right, you guys can just go look this up. But green Luma it's got the most actual photosites on most digital sensors because it's used to pick up light information as well as color information.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with, if you have if you have a 4K camera, odds are you have 2K Luma sensors, and then, or 2.5K of Luma of green Luma sensors, and then everything else is actually like half that.
Mm-hmm.
And together it'll make a 4K image, but the only one that's really pixel for pixel is the green Luma. So you go and run it through this thing, and it takes that Luma value and is able to apply those filmic effects to it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Ben Dobbins recently purchased this amazing, amazing film look. It's $200, so I'm probably going to pick it up myself. But essentially, you tell it which digital sensor you're using.
Mm-hmm.
You tell it which film stock you want to emulate. And this guy could not tell the difference. I'm sorry. If they double blinded him, because, you know, he probably walked in and they, like, it wasn't a double blind, and it's a 50-50 shot, right? Right. If they double blinded him and gave him like 10 of these, if he guessed it, I would bow at his feet. I would be like, yes, you're wrong still. You're wrong for wanting to do right. film, but you are amazing.
Right.
He would but not. Then
he argued that, well, you know, Affleck still shoots on, because it's Matt Damon and Ben Affleck uh-huh. thing. And they're like, yeah, you know, we still shoot on film. We've got $100 million budget films,
mm-hmm.
and you're getting $3 million to shoot this thing.
Yeah, so there's about half of that is just your film stock.
And then HBO was like, you know, they're... Everyone is trying to indicate to him that, mm-hmm. you know, you want to do all these things, you're limited. Mm-hmm. You're going to have X number of takes, because once you run out of the film,
yeah.
you run out of the film. And well, exactly. to do that, getting the film for what you want is a third of your budget.
Mm-hmm.
That's just... For film stock,
which you can well, literally
probably plus yeah. the processing and everything else, but just to do film, it's going to cost this. And they kept going down and down. And then finally, the executive producer from HBO is like, I'll tell you what, you can have film. You could totally do it. Or if you want on shoot on digital, I'll give you two more production days.
Oh, I hope he picked the production days.
Nope. Pick film.
What a dick.
And when it came down to the end of the thing,
uh-huh.
they're rushing around trying to get stuff done, don't have enough time, and the producer's like, huh, sure could have used those extra two production days, huh?
Well, the thing is, if he shot on digital, he would have also gained two production days there.
Right.
That's the other thing that he's not thinking about.
Yeah.
Because you get your dailies the second they come out of the camera.
Yep.
You get... fuck, dude. It's so stupid.
It's really awesome to watch, especially for me now,
mm-hmm.
to understand what some of this stuff is. And I can't get the third season because that was the one they did with Bravo or something, and they're mm-hmm. holding on to it. But you can see seasons 1, 2, and 4
mm-hmm.
on HBO.
Okay.
And so worth it. Just to watch what these people are doing, not listening to... being small. I mean, and small's fine. We're small. But I now know, okay, so this is what the producer does and this and that and the other thing. And who am I going to listen to?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, well, I want a director who's going to fight for X and Y and Z. And it's just mm-hmm. like, yeah, fight for A, give in on B, C, mm-hmm. D, E, F. Oh, G is quite important. But you can't just go, I want the entire alphabet or I'm going home.
Well, it also
doesn't work.
I will say that if your entire film is based on the fact that it has to be on film, it's not a good film.
Right. And that was Effie's point, was that she's like, you're not servicing the film. You're servicing this thing that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't care about the film. Because if you cared about the film
mm-hmm.
and the product, mm-hmm. you wouldn't be worried about half of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like the location wasn't quite right and all this stuff. And so everything was written.
Then fucking make it happen.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
Everything was written for night.
Yeah.
But when you're shooting at Douglas Fairbanks' house in Hollywood, which he finally, after mm-hmm. 3 weeks, said yes to, there's an ordinance in Beverly Hills that says you got to shut off everything at 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
No filming past 9:30 unless you get everyone affected. So they put a pin in a map. This is my location. Here's a circle. You got to get 23 houses to sign off on
mm-hmm.
you working nights.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't get everyone to sign off. And he's like, well, what am I going to do? And Effie's like, you picked the location a week before
mm-hmm.
we shot. We couldn't get this done. You got to rewrite it for daytime.
I hate this guy. I don't even know him, and I hate him.
Oh, he's just, yeah.
I hate him.
You need to watch it just for that, because I was just begging everything to fall on his head.
Now, if you want to make an art piece where the film is the art piece, the film is the centerpiece.
Totally
which is,
cool.
Which is what Hateful Eight kind of was, I feel,
mm-hmm.
because it certainly wasn't the fucking writing. I don't want to spoil anything, but...
Right.
It's eight fucking characters that are all Quentin Tarantino talking to each other.
Okay.
So, all right. That being said, the film was really the art piece here. He wanted to make an art piece. He wanted this roadshow picture that has an intermission, that has acts, that has, you know, where people get up and they talk about it in the middle and like, oh, what's going to happen? And he wanted this 1970s theater experience.
Mm-hmm.
He really wanted this 1970s going to the theater with your film buddies
right.
experience. Okay. And because of that, I'm not going to hate on Hateful Eight's choice to use film. Plus he had the money to do it, obviously.
Yeah.
I will say that he could have done it without film. And for everybody except for him who wanted to do it as an experiment in film, it would have been a no-op. It would have literally been the same fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, all of that being said, what it comes down to is it annoys me for one reason and one reason only, really. It annoys me because it's a guy punching down. It's a guy sitting up in a high castle who has tons of Hollywood connections and made his break and got where he's going and is telling people to not use the tools at their disposal because it means that they're cheap and worthless. And he's punching down to all these new filmmakers who maybe want to put more into production values.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And you could have shot this on digital, gotten the same look and feel, mm-hmm. and the same frame and everything.
Yes.
That would have lasted for posterity on... You could have done it, I'm assuming, a little bit here, a little squishy there, so that if it's digital or if it's seen this, that, or the other thing... Mm-hmm. You're going to get within percentages of exactly the frame that mm-hmm. he shot it in versus, oh, you're watching it on an inferior product, so mm-hmm. you're going to miss yes. some of the awesome frame that I did.
Right, which, I mean, that's like what watching movies on TV is all, sure. like, has always been about. Back in the 4x3 yeah, days, pan, and, pan scan. And scan, and, oh, it made you feel like you were sick on a roller coaster.
I don't want black bars on my television. It's yeah. cutting off what I can see.
Well, and when your average TV size was 24 inches, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but now the average fucking TV is like 60 inches. It's yeah. fucking insane. Like, put the black bars back. Let's get the whole frame. But that's the other thing, is people thought the black bars were cutting off instead of
right
actually adding onto the sides. And I've had arguments with people about that, and they get fucking violent. They're like, no, it's cutting off. Like, no, you don't. It's not.
When you go to a movie theater, is it a square screen?
Mm-hmm.
No.
So put that thing in a square. What's actually getting cut off? What?
The top and bottom where the black bars are.
Shut up, dude. Just shut up. So if you're making films, if you're out there making films, don't listen to people like Quentin Tarantino. Fuck him. Fuck him in his face. He didn't even like stop to write a movie. He just shat something out so that he had an excuse to make a very, very beautiful experiment on a very, very expensive canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Very expensive. Here's what the way I look at it. To do Clerks today,
mm-hmm.
Kevin Smith wouldn't have had to go into crippling debt.
Right.
Because almost 100% of Clerks was free except for the fucking film stock, which he had to, I think he did it on 16 mil to get it cheaper.
And I think he got a bunch of ends.
He did get a bunch of ends. Which is why a lot of the shit's super short, too.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have enough time to... I think his largest mag was like 7 minutes. So he couldn't even like film full scenes that he wanted to film. And he had to get $60,000 of credit card debt to do that. Today, he could have taken one credit card, fed his fucking crew
mm-hmm.
and his cast, and come away with a much superior film with the shots he really wanted.
Yep.
Without... I mean, half of the reason that Clerks is frankly so bad, it's part of the reason it's so good too, I guess, but half the reason it's so bad is because they didn't have time to do a bunch of takes or the stock to do a bunch of takes.
Right.
So you end up with a lot of really bad performances because that's the take they got.
Mm-hmm.
So, anywho, should we get to questions?
Yes.
Okay.
Rob McLennan writes, any opinion on the situation with CBS Paramount versus Star Trek?
Axanar.
The
lawsuit.
I know nothing about it.
Okay. It is totally... Not only is it within CBS and Paramount's right to protect their copyright...
Being Star Trek.
It is their duty to do it. Otherwise, it can fall into the public domain. So... While I would have no issue with Star Trek falling into the public domain and think it would be a beautiful thing, obviously the people who own it at CBS and Paramount do not feel that way.
And what's Axanar?
It's a fan film.
Mm-hmm.
Were it just a fan film, this would not be an issue because CBS and Paramount have said that fan films are okay they're not canon, and they can't mention the word Star Trek, I think, is the big thing, right?
Okay, so Star Trek Phoenix is perfectly
legal and legit currently. The problem is when professionals begin working on it. So Axanar had industry pros, many of whom came from previous Star Trek series, and they raised a shit ton of money into the level that you would be profiting off of it. So the amount of money they raised, you can say 100% of it will go to production, but it raised, I think, over $2 million or something like that. I'm not entirely sure about how much. So
wow.
Seth, double check me on that. But it raised a shit ton of money.
But a lot of money.
But basically, you're in a situation now where, from a copyright law standpoint, letting this happen without attempting to protect might trigger a public domain precedent. So this is IP owned by CBS and Paramount, period. Yes, you can have feelings one way or the other. Does it really belong to the fans? Does it really belong to blah, blah, blah? The fact of the matter is, no, it belongs to CBS and Paramount. It, you know, CBS owns it because Desilu Industries owned it, and their holdings went to CBS and all of that jazz. It is owned by these companies. They own it. So, you know, I mean, yeah, they're not little guys. But if you apply the same thing to a little guy, that would seem pretty dickish to say, oh, you know, I just go ahead and make the exact same thing that person's making using their IP and fuck them. So from that standpoint, I personally, while I think that there would have been a better way to handle it PR-wise, and maybe there could have been some work done to try and find a middle ground where maybe it became an official canon production. Like that could have been a possibility. Despite all that, I do not feel CBS or Paramount are in the wrong in any way. And that's going to be a super unpopular opinion, but I don't think that they're wrong. Well, I think they could have handled it better, but they're not wrong.
Right. And it's like Fox not releasing
the
original Star Wars stuff. You know, it's they're in business. They put out a lot of money to make a thing. It got popular. That's what everyone hopes happens. And it's their property, and that probably should have been vetted before the Kickstarter and all of those things. And known that the scope has to be this. So if you're going to fund, we need money. It stops at this. Okay, we're stopping the campaign. No more. We're refunding people because we hit a limit.
Yep.
I mean, all of those things should have been known.
Yep.
By the production company trying to do this thing so that they could do what they want to do within the scope that they have been allowed to do it in.
Right. Now, keep in mind, there's an important distinction here. This is not parody or critique. This is a wholly produced, for profit. After a time, they'll be making profit on ads and on sales and all that stuff. A wholly produced for profit production. This isn't a parody of a Star Trek situation that would be protected. That's fully protected. They couldn't do anything. They could file a C&D, but it wouldn't do anything. Like, basically, they'd have to go to court and they would lose if it was parody. This is not. This is acting as if canon.
Now, is this the one that has Chekhov and the Doctor?
No, that one was garbage.
I don't know what the Axanar is.
So Axanar is a story of a star system. This is my understanding, and forgive me for not maybe knowing 100% of this. Axanar is essentially a spot in the quadrant that was disputed during the Klingon War. So the Klingons, 100 Years War or whatever it was, the Klingons, if they got Axanar, they would have been able to push further into Federation space. The Federation, if they got Axanar, they could have pushed. And this is this is during the time frame when the Enterprise, the very first NCC 1701, is being built. Because no Federation ship like that has existed before, where it's equal parts war machine as well as science vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, the Klingons are working on their warship, which I assume would be the Bird of Prey, but I'm not entirely sure. Or is that a Romulan? Fuck, I don't remember. One's Warbird, one's Bird of Prey. So the Klingons were working on a warship. The Federation was working on sort of an answer to that, which would become the Enterprise. Axanar is this planet in the middle that they're, and it's about the battle and the war and the strategery around that whole thing. So it's,
I think it's Romulan Bird of Prey.
Then it's probably a Klingon Warbird.
Yeah.
I forget though. Whatever.
I got a 50-50 shot. It sounded smart.
Sure. Sounds good. Anyway, so like the stuff I've seen from it, like they did a really cool documentary piece and they got people, I cannot remember his name off the top of my head for some reason, but you ever watch the TV show, Alien Nation?
Yeah.
The TV show, not the movie. The movie was great too, but the TV show, the detective Sykes in Alien Nation. Okay. He, and I believe he was on Enterprise as a Klingon officer, or sorry, Klingon, fuck, Vulcan officer. He was on Enterprise as a Vulcan officer. He's playing the same character. So this is probably 50 years after Enterprise, because Enterprise was about 100 years, I think, before. No, it can't be right either. I don't remember the timeline. It's like 70 years or something before Star Trek, the original series.
Mm-hmm.
So someone out there is going to know the timeline better than me. But anyway, he's still alive. The Vulcan guy is still alive.
Oh, is there something that's been shot?
Yes.
Is there a Star Trek series that's pre-OST?
Yes. Chronologically, the show Enterprise was pre-OST.
Oh.
With Scott Bakula.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that was post.
I didn't know that.
That's post Cochrane. Cochrane is the, Zefram Cochrane's the guy who invented warp drive.
Right.
After World War IV or whatever, out in the boonies, took a woman up to the ship. There's no wall. What? You know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Riker was there for some reason. So after Cochrane, so that's when the Vulcans notice them, is when Cochrane does his first warp jump and ends up basically out at Pluto instantly and then back. Cool, right? The Vulcans come down. They start the space program, and I think that's another like almost 70 or 100 years after Cochrane is when Enterprise takes place.
Okay.
And then after Enterprise is the original series, and between those is where Axanar lives. And then after the original series, there's Star Trek Continues, which is the one I think you were thinking about, where James Doohan's son plays Scotty. It's the, it's essentially the missing 2 years from the original series.
Okay.
Though those were covered in the cartoon too, so I don't know how those canon out. And then of course you've got all of the other stuff that's kicked off after.
Right.
So that's kind of how it all works out.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, CBS is in the right, totally in the right, and I'm not even mad. Not even a little bit.
And as I said before, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Paula Moran writes, how do you... That is not an indication of the question. That is an indication of my dry throat. Paula Moran asks, how do you feel about camping? And have you had any interesting experiences?
There is no such thing as a person who hasn't had an interesting experience while camping.
Hmm.
That person does not exist. You've either never camped or you've had interesting experiences.
Right.
So, oh my God. How do I feel about it? If I have a futon, I'm fine with it. If I don't have something that level to sleep on, I hate every second of it. I need to have a fucking futon style mattress or I hate it. In general, I like being able to shower every day too, but I camp a few places where that's possible. And, you know, I've done creek baths where you've camped for a few days and just gone to the creek. Overall though, I'm lukewarm on camping. I could take it or leave it. Sometimes I really, really, really want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Other times you wouldn't catch me dead in the woods. Like I want city life. at this moment. Like,
sure,
I want my microwave popcorn tonight. But, you know, yeah, every once in a while I really want to do it. Happens about once every 2 years. I do like going out into the woods with a specific strain of fungus with me. That's mm-hmm. that I find very enjoyable. And yeah, as far as, I mean, like campsite experimentation is the pretty much backbone of anyone who's been in the SCA or anything like that. So, you know, from basically 17 years old until about 27, camping was about going out and playing grab ass with as many people as you could.
Unfortunately, it was never that for me.
Best experience I ever had was I was on an SCA camping trip, and one of the people in the house next to us had died. So at the SCA event, they did a Viking funeral.
Nice.
It was until the county fire department showed up and shut down every fire on the campsite.
Mm-hmm.
But up until that point, it was great. It was big. It was a big fire.
Yeah. I come to it not from the SCA variety, but from scouting and from an avid backpacking family. and when we were younger, we'd do car camping. And I still like, to some extent, car camping. But I don't... It's a mixed bag because I like campgrounds because they're easy to get people to and from, and oftentimes they're nearby things that you want to do. But the cost of entering the campground, every car having to have a parking permit, you know, camping used to be the vacation that you could take for a weekend for $10 because that's what it cost to buy all the firewood.
Mm-hmm.
There, I am all about having, and I used to have one for a number of years and probably used it twice, which was national parks, like you do when you go skiing. Oftentimes, you have to have the snow pass.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, park I'm pass. Okay with a park pass that helps mm-hmm. to support the parks. If I'm going to use them, even if I don't use them.
Yeah, it's a direct tax. It makes sense.
I want to do that. Yeah. But if I have to have that to go into the park and then I've got to pay, you know, the same cost as it's going to be to go get a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to go camp when I go to the coast then. So my kind of camping is park at the trailhead that you have to have a permit for.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Put the pack on my back and go hike in, you know, 3-5 miles, whatever, to get to the mountain stream. Creek, lake, whatever.
You just put your tent down and call it good.
Yeah, or go Forest Service roads.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to do it in outside of Detroit Lake mm-hmm. in Oregon. Beautiful big lake that happened because there was a dam
mm-hmm.
on the river, and so it would fill up. And so summertime, it was great. We'd take the Sea-Doos down and, you know, just go on the boats and fishing and swimming in the whole nine yards. But instead of camping at the campground, we would go up a logging road so that we're by ourselves, find a landing, park all the cars, put up all the tents, drink. Invariably, somebody sits down in the lawn chair that breaks, that then rolls down the hill through mm-hmm. all of the blackberry bushes and brambles and stuff, and we get a good laugh out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God that was never me. there were plenty of other things I did that people could laugh at, but that wasn't me. But the most interesting
mm-hmm.
experience I ever had, and I will.
What was that?
I don't know.
Huh.
Thought it was a light bulb going, but it wasn't.
Yeah, that was weird. I wonder if it was one of those. The things for your hard drives. I wonder if one of them popped. They're all in boxes.
Yeah, I don't know why it would pop though.
They were all pretty, like, massively filled.
Right.
I don't know.
But I went, so I'm not going to mention any names, but at the time in high school, my then best friend,
John Grogan,
and I went backpacking. You can't see the air quotes that I'm using here, but we were going to go hike in, a very simple, very easy, park at the trailhead, go 3 miles in to this beautiful, majestic lake at the base of Mount Jefferson. And it is a lovely, lovely area. So he picks me up because I don't have a car. And I throw my backpack in and it's got the tent. And you know, I'm like, don't worry about it. Just bring your sleeping bag, bring your clothes. I got the food. Everything's done. So I have my exterior hard frame backpack. Mm-hmm. We get to the trailhead and get ready to go up. I grab my backpack. I put it on, blah, blah, blah. Make sure I got water in the canteen. Sign the little park ranger thing. Turn around. And there he is holding, I shit you not, a hefty garbage bag with everything in it.
Nice.
So we get about a quarter mile in,
mm-hmm.
and shit's falling out everywhere.
Right.
And this is, let me back up. This gentleman was from a very affluent family where I grew up. Very, very affluent family. Who, coming home from Hawaii, got busted with the Mary Jane.
Mm-hmm. And it just went away.
And the parents didn't really do anything.
Right.
Was caught by his father. What is it, interruptus?
Coitus.
Coitus interruptus. In his dad's office.
Hmm.
On his dad's desk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dad told him to take the girl home, went next door to the restaurant that his dad owned, and had some food and just chatted. So this guy had
affluenza.
No, yeah, he had affluenza to the nth degree. So we're going on this, you know, he just wants to go hike in and smoke pot. Skinny little guy. He's wearing tennis shoes. So I'm just like, give me the fucking bag. So I take the bag. I tie it all up. Mm-hmm. I give it the big bear hug and we're walking. So now he's just going through a leisurely stroll.
Mm-hmm.
Can't hack it past about a mile.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to pull off to the side where there's a little stream that flows out of this beautiful, awesome, majestic lake and set everything up and spent the weekend there.
Yeah.
Hiking. I don't even think we got a mile and a half in.
That's
I'm like,
awesome,
seriously,
yeah.
This is, and you know, bear hugging a hefty bag with a pack and everything else on it. Mm-hmm. I was just like, that was a point in my life where I felt it has helped shape me be the person that I am today, but I had zero self-esteem, felt that I needed to. And the funny thing was later in life, probably twice as old as we were when that happened, something else significant happened. And one of my friends finally said, you know what? If he didn't have money, he wouldn't ever have had friends. And I think maybe now 3 times past the age we were when that happened, I think there's some forgiveness starting to flow.
But yeah.
Yeah, that was, you know, you got the cantankerous, same thing, Detroit Lake, only we're at the campground this time, because there's a number of us. We wanted to see what would happen if you threw a beer can into the fire, because it's supposed to explode, and that'll be awesome, because we'd already had about 4 cases of the beer that we were going to throw.
You ended up with it pissing hot beer all over you, didn't you?
So we threw it in the fire.
You can just say yes.
And everyone runs away. No, because there's more. What is...
Well,
what
my
is
ride's
it? Is it,
here.
Is so. It Paul Harvey that says, you know, and and then... But wait, there's more. So we throw it in there. We all run away. We all consume another couple beers while we're waiting. And then we just hear this... tss, and we look at it, and it's got this little pinhole shooting foam out.
Nice.
And we're like... Man, seriously? Oh, well, they must engineer the cans now so that that can't happen. Oh, okay, so...
I don't know
what's... It's gotta be the bags.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, man. Well, let's get this wrapped up and figure it out.
Before the studio explodes. Mm-hmm. So we all go back to the campfire, all peering over just as it explodes.
Yeah, because it's got to get a little bit of room. Yeah.
So this thing explodes. So now not only did we get pissed on by hot beer, it's been cooking for 15 minutes. We also got all the ash from the fire. So, yeah, it was
nice.
Yeah, it was really ridiculous.
So maybe next weekend we'll have more camping stories to tell you, because we are going to Fort Worden, and look forward to that. We will definitely be recording something there, hopefully with some other voices that you know and love.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Did you like the Neil first, or do you like the Neil after?
I like the Neil first.
Okay, so Neil deGrasse.
It makes people want to listen for their names longer.
So Neil deGrasse Tyson, if you're listening.
Which apparently you haven't in 2 years.
You are not.
2+ years.
I mean, you could come camping with us.
Yeah.
Neil, you could point out the constellations.
And which are the satellites and which are shooting stars. And
yeah, and you could.
Are they shooting or are they just falling?
You could talk about the Martian and get really angry.
Yeah.
Out in the woods.
Yeah, that would be great.
It's a great place to get angry about the Martian.
But in the meantime, for those who are listening, we'd like to thank our Patreon backers.
Hawk Robinson.
Leslie Sedlak.
Todd McKimmy.
Donald Evans.
Bradley Swan.
Trampas Johnson.
Gordon DeDuke.
Digby DeDavis LLC.
Paula Moran.
Amanda Cook.
Mark Bevier.
James Herbert.
Adam Morey.
Matthew Hunt.
Mike Thompson.
Tim Martin.
Rob McLennan.
Lotta Jerf.
Laura Adams.
Tom Brophy.
Tom Stewart.
Doogie Sharp.
Justin Everett.
Brittany Bentley.
Brad Roberts.
Jennifer Rivenberry.
Rival Guy.
Chad Jones.
That's all, folks.
That's it. That's all I got. No more carrots.